Welcome to Classic Songs Revisited, where we look back at some of the greatest songs of yesteryear. In this installment, we'll hear an excerpt from David Bowie's Suffragette City, performed by Vincent Price.
Hey, man! Oh, leave me alone, you know! Hey, man! Oh, Henry, get off the phone! I gotta straighten my face! This mellow thigh chick just put my spine out of place! Oh, don't lean on me, man, 'cause you can't afford the ticket! I'm back from Suffragette City! Oh, don't lean on me, man, 'cause you ain't got time to check it! You know my Suffragette City is out of sight. She's all right. Oh, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am!
This has been Classic Songs Revisited. See you next time.
Ow, hit me!
Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chris Abalo's podcast experiment, and I am Chris Abalo. Welcome to episode 22. I should know that by now. It's actually open in front of me, so I have a reference to which episode this is. And for whatever reason, I still blanked on it when I started this little recording. So anyway, welcome. 2014 marches on. Second show of January, second show of the new year. And it's a good one. But first, let's start out with a little bit of complaining, because this really pissed me off the other day. I was in Whole Foods, and all this stuff always happens to me in public restrooms, where I notice, I guess, the most annoying behaviors of people, or at least maybe people just act their worst in public bathrooms. But anyway, I'm in this men's room, and a guy walks in with his phone. I don't know where it was, if it's in his pocket, if he had like one of those holsters on his belt or something like that, but with music just playing. It sounded like the thing was at full volume too, like the external speaker was turned up all the way, and yeah, just playing the whole time. Goes into his stall, I assume he sat down, and the music's just playing the whole time. Yeah, do we really need to be our own personal DJs and let everyone hear it? That's just obnoxious. You don't need to walk around with your mobile device's volume turned all the way up so you can listen to your music, because maybe someone else doesn't want to. And imagine the nightmare it would have been if another guy walked into the men's room with music playing on his phone with the volume turned all the way up. That's just obnoxious. That's just such narcissistic behavior. And but totally okay. In that guy's mind, totally made sense. And nothing wrong with it at all. No, it was just fine. Hey, I'm just listening to some music. Yeah, I don't like people doing their own thing. Because if it's not my thing, then you should stop. Because I don't like it. And that should be reason enough for anybody, right? And no, that's not an only in Los Angeles thing. I'm sure that happens all the time. Now that everybody has a mobile device in their pocket that stores an infinite amount of music in a cloud somewhere. But I do have an only in Los Angeles all ready to go. And here it is. This is a very expedited monologue at the front of this show. But alas, here is the only in Los Angeles segment for this episode. I went to a shopping plaza, as you do. And in this plaza was this grocery store, which is in California. I'm not sure if it goes beyond California or surrounding states or whatever. But this grocery chain called Ralph's. And outside of this particular location was a guy sitting. You know how when you're in this, let's say you're in New York, maybe they have them in London or some cities, maybe you go into a subway, that's probably the most common place, or occasionally maybe outside of a business or on the street, maybe you'll have musicians, you'll have guys playing the sax, maybe someone playing a trumpet, a guy playing an acoustic guitar or something like that. There's a lot of that on Hollywood Boulevard. And same thing in New York, when I've gone to subway stations, there's a dude with a sax and he's got his case open and people are leaving tips. Nothing wrong with that. I honestly don't have anything against it. That's not, if you're playing music for tips and you're just out in public, that's different than blasting it out of your cell phone for everybody to hear, because maybe you don't like your music. Maybe you don't like saxophone either, but I'd rather hear a dude playing something on his own and just improvising, or even just playing tunes people know on the street, than some douche playing the music on his phone. But anyway, so outside of this grocery store wasn't a sax, wasn't a trumpet, wasn't a guitar. It was a dude with a tin whistle. Yeah, sitting with a tin whistle with a little, I think it was a can or something like that. Maybe it was a hat. Maybe it was a wizard's hat. And yeah, looking for tips, just playing these what sounded like kind of Celtic tunes. You know what? Never seen that before, so I'm filing that under only in Los Angeles because I have a feeling that Los Angeles is the only place you'll see that. Maybe Dublin or the Shire. Now, that, of course, is right in line with the goofy stuff I talk about on this show, the things I see during my day-to-day. And I don't really talk about myself too much, and I don't talk about real life, at least my personal life at all. But I do want to take a moment to speak about my Uncle Raymond, who just passed away. In case you don't know, my father is the youngest of 10, although you probably heard about that if you listened to the last episode of the show with all the holiday shenanigans that were going on with my father's side of the family. So my Uncle Raymond is actually was 10 years older than my father. And unfortunately, over the last year, has had some declining health and ultimately just passed away. And with it being such a family-oriented trip home for me, during Christmas and New Year's, all the family I had seen, and of course, spending time with my parents, who I hadn't seen in 6 months. And not a big deal, but still, for 6 months, that's kind of a while, at least for me. So it's one of those things that's really difficult about being out here, because I, of course, can't be there for any services. And I'm not expected to be either, just because of the distance. And, you know, with such a big family, it would be impossible for everybody to make it to every single occasion. In a case like this, this is one of those occasions where everybody wanted to have a family get together that wasn't because of a funeral, and there really aren't any weddings coming up, unless one of the many, many second cousins happens to get married. So unfortunately, as it turns out, the family will be getting together for my Uncle Raymond's funeral. And I do want to read a little bit of the obituary that his family published in the Star Ledger. Now, Raymond actually is spelled not Raymond, as in everybody loves Raymond. It's actually R-A-M-O-N, which in theory might be pronounced Ramon, but it was and is Raymond. So there you go. So I am going to read a little bit of his obituary because I feel it is appropriate, and because I would like to at least, even though he'll live on in the memories of the family and the stories everyone can tell about him, and certainly through his children and grandchildren, it does seem appropriate to immortalize him in something that is related to the family, in as much as this is my show, it's got my name on it, and I'll do what I want. So I do want to immortalize him publicly in this format. So here it is. Raymond Abalo, 82, of Belleville, New Jersey, passed away on January 19th, 2014. Again, I'm abbreviating this. Before moving to Belleville in 1959, Mr. Abalo resided in Newark, New Jersey, which is where my father's family grew up, his parents and his siblings. He worked in the oil house for ITT in Nutley, New Jersey for 25 years and also worked as a manager of the valet parking concession for 40 years at the Manor in West Orange, New Jersey. Was something of a legend in the place, actually. He was a mentor and role model for many of the young men working under his supervision. He was very proud of the cameo part he had in the famous movie The French Connection. So it's a little bit more Hollywood lineage in the family. Yeah, he was. He was an extra in The French Connection, actually. I don't know if I mentioned that in any other podcast, this one or, you know, that other one. He served as a corporal in the U.S. Marines during the Korean War. Raymond was a Golden Glove boxer. Check that out. That's pretty impressive, right? Raymond is survived by his loving wife of 54 years, Jean Abalo, and his loving and devoted children and grandchildren. So there's a little bit about my Uncle Raymond. Raymond Abalo, may he rest in peace, lived a really good 82 years, and will definitely be missed. Now, as you may know, I don't have any brothers, but my dear friend, Dan Hempel, is one of the closest things to it. Dan and I have been very close since we met in the fall of 1999. Well, actually, we met previously, which is something we'll talk about in the upcoming interview that you're going to hear in a few minutes, or chat. It's not really an interview. He and I were just talking while I was home visiting Jersey, and we've been close since fall of 1999, I should say. Dan is absolutely one of my closest and dearest friends, and one of those people who will always be there. He's always going to be a part of my life, and it's something I take a great deal of comfort in. And no, I'm not trying to be sappy. I'm just telling the truth. So it seemed appropriate after all this time to sit and actually have a one-on-one chat with Dan, which we've kind of done in little bits and pieces over at theonlypodcast.com. And Dan has been in multiple episodes of The Only Podcast That Matters, which if you haven't listened to them, if you want to get a feel for how hysterical Dan is, then you should check out The Only Podcast That Matters and look for, there are not one, not two, but three episodes known as DanCast. And overall has been in 17 episodes of The Only Podcast That Matters, which is 10%, seeing how we just hit 170 episodes. That's 10% of the episodes of The Only Podcast That Matters. And he's always a laugh riot when he's on the show. He was in the hysterical Xmas cast that we just did a few weeks back. Well, actually, now it's about a month back. And this conversation isn't as, let's say, exuberant as that. It's he and I just sitting, chatting one-on-one about growing up together. And we were being a bit nostalgic with looking at some old photos and listening to some old recordings of band rehearsals from well over 10 years ago at this point. So it was really good to sit and just have a chat about all this time we spent together. And if you like Dan, as I said, then you should find this fairly interesting. So check out me sitting one-on-one with the one-of-a-kind Dan Hempel. Ah. Hey. You comfy?
Yep.
You look it. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, at long last, I'm sitting here with the one and only Fat, a.k.a. Dan Hempel. You know him, you love him.
Yep. This is Fats.
Man of few words. That's it. That's him. We've been spending a lot of time this afternoon talking about, well, getting old, of course. And then thinking back a lot, just how much things have changed. We're looking at a bunch of old pictures, listening to some old band rehearsals and things like that. And marveling at 14 plus years of being friends. It's insane. It is crazy.
It is crazy.
Just think how long we've, I don't know, yeah. We've been close.
And it just flew by.
It did. It doesn't.
Quick.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it's been even 10 years, but it's been 14.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It's ridiculous. I don't know if you have, and I don't mean this in like a narcissistic way. I don't know if you have any first impression or any memory of me at all. I don't have a specific one of you. But do you remember anything about me circa 1999 or even before, as far as kind of when we started hanging out or when we first met? I don't remember exactly being introduced to you, but I do remember roughly some stuff. Do you remember anything about me?
I think our relationship really grew in Latin class when we started talking about music, because you sat right in front of me and
yeah.
I sat right behind you.
Yeah, that's where I remember the majority of things.
But I don't think we were ever like introduced. I think we were introduced in Latin class when we started talking about music. I think that's...
See, I have this vague recollection of sometime sophomore year. I don't know who would have introduced us, but I knew who you... Like, I knew you were Dan. You knew I was Chris. And then fast forward to September of 1999, and we're sitting in front and in back right. of each other in Latin class. So we knew each other going into class. I just don't remember how.
Me neither.
I'm pretty sure, though, someone introduced us around sophomore year, maybe junior year. And I remember thinking, oh, that's Dan. Dan's sitting behind me. Cool.
I think we, in sophomore year, didn't we sit at the same lunch table?
Maybe. See, we're getting old. We can't even remember all this stuff.
Because I remember sitting at, you know, the lunch table with, you know, Ricardo, Binu, Matt, and Anderson in like freshman or sophomore year.
Right.
And I think maybe you occasionally popped in that table. I don't know.
Probably. That would have been, see, those are the guys I would have been sitting with
yeah.
in high school around that time. Because senior year, since I went into senior year with a car, I was almost never there for lunch.
Me neither.
I would go out. Yeah, and many times you and I would go out.
and get lunch together.
Because I remember senior year, the people we sat lunch with, they were like, we never see you in lunch anymore. We never see you at all anymore. It's because we're always cutting class.
Yeah, we were pretty bad in that respect.
But I had a memory of just us sitting in Latin class, and I think it was like just a very foggy, kind of a snowy day.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shabaton was just yapping.
Yeah, our teacher.
And then you just turned around and you're just like, oh, you want to get out of here? I was like, yeah, let's just go. So we just left.
We just left. Didn't ask to be excused.
And it was so funny because I guess all the sophomores were a little shocked at that too, because, you know, they weren't seniors yet. They didn't know the privileges we kind of had at that.
Well, they also didn't realize that we didn't care at that point. Right. I mean, I knew going into senior year, I'd pretty much made my mind up that I was going to be going to Ocean County College, OCC, the local community college.
Everybody was.
Yeah, or they're going to Stockton.
Oh, yeah.
That's where our graduating class went. Maybe five, I think there were like 300 people in our graduating class.
Right.
Maybe 5% of them went out of state. But I think everybody else went to Stockton or OCC, which is fine if you don't know what you want to do, which I didn't know what I wanted to major in. I just, at that point, was planning on going to college because that's what you did. That was kind of what was expected of you. But I knew that, I mean, community college you can get into with pretty much no qualification. I didn't think you'd be a dropout, probably high school dropout, and get into community college. But I knew it would be pretty impossible for me to, A, not graduate, and B, somehow blow my chance at going to OCC. So senior year, I didn't care. And I didn't want to take the AP, advanced placement classes. So I was just in classes with everybody else. And then I had to take some kind of language because I didn't want to take the AP Spanish. That's how I ended up in Latin too. Because I was that weird. It took two. I'm sure we went over this in the only podcast that matters. But in case you're somehow fresh to this story, you listeners out there, my freshman year, I took Spanish 2 and Latin 1 just because I need to take another class. And I thought, like, oh, I'll take Latin. Don't know why. But it ended up working out 3 years later when I was when I was a senior, and I was sat in front of you and just in front and to the left of Andrew. So it ended up working out kind of well. The only memory I have of you, though, is pretty much you kind of having a, I don't know, you're kind of bangs combed forward, like not in like an emo way or like one of those sad kids or something like sad high school kids. You were just quiet, and then you just had the kind of black Nirvana shirt with the smiley face with the tongue out and the X's with the eyes. That's kind of all I remember from you prior to senior year. And I was just happy that there was another senior in Latin class too. And at least somebody who I knew, someone I knew was cool besides. I don't know, we started hanging out pretty fast though.
Yeah, we did.
It was, yeah, it didn't take long. It may have very well have just been, well, if it was snowing, we must have been, unless it started snowing in like November, but we were definitely hanging out by then because my birthday was October. And I remember we went out for my birthday. Went to Olive Garden because that was fancy.
Yeah. And I didn't have any money because I spent it on like two MXPX CDs or
You
something.
Did. Yeah, we went to the wall.
And then they were like, the waitress was like, you want some bread or anything? Like, you got to eat something.
I remember that.
Because it was Darian and Pace.
Right.
Who went with us.
Because you bought, oh, I remember. I think you bought, was it at the show?
At
the live
show.
The live, yeah. MXPX CD. And it was like $19. And I think that was right. All the money you had on you.
Yeah.
And I remember I was so happy, too, because I got Bruce Dickinson's Accident of Birth CD, which I played to death in the car. I put it on a cassette because my first car had a cassette player in it.
And that's
drove
when
you nuts.
We were still using cassette folks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That
it was still popular, too, cassette tapes.
Yeah, my car was a 98, and a 99 still had cassette. And that was when you started making me tapes, because we were talking about... You had said, like, if I listen to punk rock or pop punk or anything like that. And I was just like, no, because all I knew from punk rock at the time was either Billy Idol or a bunch of, which he wasn't even punk rock. At least his music wasn't.
I remember because you kept referencing, hey, I got a friend I work with who's, like, into the Huntingtons. And I remember I was shocked. I was like, wait, he's heard of the Huntingtons? And, you know, at that point, nobody's really heard of, like,
nobody
those
had.
Kind of bands.
Nobody.
But you're like, oh, yeah, I have a friend. His name is Christian who... who listens to those bands. I was like, really?
Yeah.
That's how we kind of really got into.
That was, yeah, we were talking about, because all the information I had about the Ramones was kind of through him. And he had told me about this band and that band and bands who I'd heard of in name only. Never seen a t-shirt or anything. Bands like Screeching Weasel and the Queers and all these other, what I guess you'd still regard as being pop punk bands. Not just punk bands. I think you put them in the pop punk right. kind of under that umbrella. And he had said, like, oh, I used to play, because he played guitar as well. And that's kind of where he and I connected at first. And he was telling me about how he could play the first four Ramones albums and all that straight through. I think maybe I mentioned that to you, like, hey, I have this friend who says he can play all the Ramones albums. And you were just like, I love the Ramones. And then we kind of started hanging out and forged a bond in our mutual love of music in general. Even though we didn't listen to a lot of the same stuff. If anything, you turned me on to stuff like that. Because the first tape you made me was The Huntingtons. It was The Good and the Bad and the Ugly Live. Right. Was on side one. And side two was like Screeching Weasel, MXPX.
I think some random.
Yeah, Slick Shoes bands, maybe. Yeah. Goatee Hook. A lot of bands. Like a lot of random bands. Like you just put together those in the mixtape days. Which was fun because at that time you could just put a.
Yeah, there was no iPod
together.
Shuffle at that time. You no. couldn't really shuffle anything at that time.
Well, there were no mix CDs either. This is even right. before. You may have been able to buy a CD burner for your computer, but they were probably like well over $100,
right.
which was a fortune. When I mean, it was in 99 when we were 17, 18. But yeah, my 18th birthday was when we, I think around the time we really started hanging out. And that group of friends later at the end of the month, when our friend Darian has his birthday, we all went to Fridays, which was next door to that same Olive Garden.
Right.
And it was like 8 or 10 of us. And that whole group, we pretty much hung out all through senior year. And but our ritual was, on most days, we just leave. Because Latin class was second period. So it was 8:45 in the morning, maybe?
Yeah.
I think first period was like 7:50. It ended at like 35. So, yeah, like 8.
Yeah, we went to Manhattan Bagel.
Yeah, we cut class. Yeah. We just leave. We wouldn't even announce it. We just kind of get up and go. And we go to Manhattan Bagel. We grab a snack. And,
go to the mall.
Yeah, eventually we'd kill time because the mall didn't open until 10.
Go to the warehouse.
We go to Warehouse Music, which was across the street from the mall in Toms River, same place where the eventual community college
and then
went
be
to.
Back home in time for... before our parents got home.
Yeah.
And unplugged the phone so you wouldn't get that message that
your... Yeah, your child was absent for right. At least two classes. I think it was if you missed more than two.
Right.
You got a phone call home, an automated thing. It was a pre-recorded thing from one of the like three assistant principals. And then we'd hang out.
I remember that senior year I had a home ec class with Ricardo. I showed up twice to that home ec class and never went again.
and
he was disappointed, too, because he was just like, dude, we finally got a class together and you're never there.
He was like, this is great. I'm going to go through this class with Dan.
Yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to go. We're going to cook together.
Which in and of itself is weird to be excited about when you're 18.
Right, I know.
Me and my friend are going to cook together.
Yeah, but that was after lunch. And I was like, I wasn't going to stick around after lunch. I wasn't going to stick around before lunch.
Well, yeah, lunch for us as seniors, I think, was like, it was like sixth
fifth,
period?
Yeah, fifth or sixth period.
Yeah, and at that point, what were classes, like 40, 45 minutes?
Yeah, two more classes really at that.
Yeah, so lunch was at like noonish. At that point, you've been up since, I don't know, 6:30 maybe?
Yes, five or six.
Yeah, and then you finally eat lunch, and then you just wouldn't be hungry after that, so why bother? Or a lot of times, because lunch was so late for us. You and I would go to lunch, and then we wouldn't come back. Like, we'd do the opposite. We'd go to, we'd be in school all day, and then we'd get out during lunch, like, 6 period, which was, I don't know, 12:30, between 12:30 and 1 o'clock. And then we wouldn't go for, like, I think 7th and 8th period.
No, not at all.
We'd go to, if we went to lunch, we'd go to there was a Wendy's not too far. Wendy's and McDonald's were next to each other. Not too far from the high school, and then we took Route 9 further up and go to the Howell record store.
But thinking back at it before I got a full-time job, like going to school wasn't really that bad. The hours weren't bad.
Oh, definitely not.
You started your day, but your day ended, what, at like 2:45? And
yeah.
You had the rest of the afternoon
yep.
to do whatever you want.
I'd be home by 3.
Yeah, but like... at that time, you thought 3 o'clock was, oh man, it's my day's ruined because of school. 3 o'clock, what am I going to do?
No, you're right. Like, well, now because we have perspective, having worked jobs and having worked 40 hours a week, going to school from 7:45 to 2:15 isn't that bad.
No, not at all.
I wish I could work that few hours.
Those hours.
The day.
Yeah.
That'd be fine. Yeah. That'd be a really good arrangement. Like, hey, I'm home by 3 and I have the rest of my day.
But you know what? If I knew, you know, knew that, I don't think it would have cut school at all.
Well, by comparison, yeah. But if there was a time to do it, that's when we did it, which was our senior year.
But, yeah, that's true. But I'm glad I didn't know what I knew, because otherwise I wouldn't have had as much fun, you know?
Oh, definitely. Oh, I had such a blast. And I was working, too. I was probably at work more hours a week than I was in high school.
But I think out of, like, out of the friends that we were close with at the time, I think me and you were the only ones that really cut class, you know, because Ricardo never cut class.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Darian never cut class.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was just like me and you mostly were the ones that weren't there every day.
Yeah, pretty much. You know?
I mean, we come to school in the morning, and by second period, like, let's get out of here.
I can't. Let's go. Let's go CD shopping. That was definitely our ritual on Tuesdays, even though we didn't follow necessarily any mainstream bands, really. Right. Especially circa 99. Who the hell was there, really? Like Korn and Limp Bizkit, Deftones.
Yeah.
There wasn't really a lot of stuff we would have been listening to, but that was new release day, street date day. So we'd go on Tuesday and go peruse the same aisles looking for stuff. But that was also because it was massive. I mean, we're that Warehouse Music store, which was, you know, across the street from the mall, was huge and had a ton of stuff.
Oh,
I mean, this is right around the time of like the Napster explosion, when people were kind of looking at it as, wait a minute, does this music industry ship have holes in it? Like, is this going to start sinking? And that at the time for me, I mean, I had started using, because that was also the first year I had internet, was senior year of high school. I was using it to find new bands, to listen to new stuff, because it was just normal for me to go out and buy CDs. Right. So I would find all these German metal bands
that you never knew about before.
Yeah, like you wouldn't hear that stuff on the radio. So that's where I got really into it. So I started buying more and more CDs. And that was when I remember you coming over to my house the first time. And this is still all senior year of high school, by the way. And I had maybe 200 CDs. And you're like, oh, man, this is too many CDs. This is too many.
But now look at our collection. 200 was nothing.
That's nothing. I'd probably had 200 more by the time we graduated. The 9 months I'd accumulated a ton more CDs. And you followed suit. Once we knew how to get our hands on stuff, and once we discovered more and more music.
Yeah, it just kept adding up.
Yeah. And we would go shopping all the time. And that, I think it was pretty much that summer was the first time we also took a ride up to Vintage Vinyl.
Yeah.
In Ford's, New Jersey.
The days of no responsibility, no bills.
Oh, so good. I mean, look, I was making payments on my car and I was paying car insurance. But that was it. This is pre-cell phone.
Right.
We didn't have pagers. I mean, there weren't any distractions.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, if I called your home phone number, you weren't home, then you weren't home.
Mm-hmm. That's it. If I showed up at your house and you weren't there, then you weren't there. If you were working, then I'd go. I stopped in work a few times because you were working at McDonald's senior year.
That's
you were
when stopping at people's houses wasn't weird because, I mean, there was no other way to get in touch. Like, if you really wanted to get in touch with a person, if you couldn't, if they weren't home or they weren't answering their home phone, you just stop by their house. Yeah, I figure I'd stop by because you weren't answering your phone.
Yeah, that's it. There were two ways.
Oh, I was sleeping. Oh, well, you want to go out? Yeah, sure. Let's go out.
Yeah,
I mean, that's it. That's awesome, you know?
I know. And now, I mean, it's cool that we're able to get in touch. Like, we arranged getting together today through text. We didn't actually speak on the phone.
Right.
But I don't know. There's a part of me that's, maybe it's just nostalgia, but if I had to go to your house to see if you were home or see if you wanted to go out, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah, that was normal.
If text messaging went away, I think I'd be okay with it.
Right.
I mean, when I was home, granted, it wouldn't work as well being 3,000 miles away.
Right. Those were the days you were 17, 18, you had a car, and when you were bored, you would just stop at people's houses, mm-hmm. your friend's house. Hey, what's up?
See who want to hang out.
You know?
That, I think, and this is going to turn me in probably a grumpy old man. This is going to be definitely since we're on in back in my day mode right now. I think that was a better time anyway, because since you had to go to someone's house or you had to call their house, your parents had to meet your friends. There was no getting around
that's
it.
True.
Whereas now I don't think that exists.
No, not at all.
Because now with text messaging, and every kid, if they can fog a mirror, they get an iPhone, or they're online chatting with people through who knows what. But now parents have no idea who their kids are in touch with. And at least when we were growing up, we might be on the tail end of that. Having that perspective of, well, we had to show up like our parents knew us by name and face, each other's parents, I should say, by name and face. Maybe not so much voice on the phone, but if I showed up, your parents would at your place, your parents would know that I was Chris and that we were going to go out. I drove the green car and all that. And same thing. If you drop by somebody's house, it also wasn't weird because you'd already met their parents and they had a feel for you.
Yep.
So. That's also why it wasn't weird then. It's probably weird now. Yeah. So if you show up, it's just like, who the hell are you?
Yeah. Why didn't you text me? Well, you know,
the parents don't know who it is.
Yeah.
Parents think it's weird. So yeah, there is that kind of weird disconnect where at least we kind of had to have that forced interaction, which was fine. I mean, I understand meeting people's parents, but
now it seems like everything's simpler, but it's just a lot more complicated in my opinion.
In many ways, yeah. It's not just a matter of getting the car, go to someone's house. I mean, it's also easier to get in the car and drive to someone's house when gas was 99 cents a gallon.
Oh, that's true. When like $3, what could you have? Tank.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that too. In junior year, before you and I hung out, I used to take my parents, because I worked at night as well, my parents' minivan, and my deal with them was I'd give them $10 a week for gas. And that would, I mean, they had a van. That gave them easily more than half a tank.
Right.
I think maybe like a minivan is probably 16 gallons.
That was
tank.
A lot of money. $10. Are you crazy?
Yeah. But then I thought, well, if I give them $10, I'm still making $200 for the week or something. So it's not bad.
Right.
And still cheaper than a car payment, as I found out. Fast forward a year later, I'm paying $300 a month for a car. So it was much easier just paying the 10 bucks. But at least in that respect, see, it was also more fun to get in adventures and kind of go off the grid, because since there wasn't a cell phone, if we were out for the day, we were out and we came home whenever, unless we called home from a payphone or something, there was no way to kind of check in with our parents, which we didn't really have to do anyway.
No.
Our parents weren't really strict in that regard. And since you and I would drive an hour away to go on the hunt for CDs.
Sometimes you wouldn't even tell your parents.
Of course.
Like the Huntington show in Philly when I was 17 and took my dad's car, drove to Philly.
That was unheard of. And now... they could call you or have a GPS trace on the phone or something like that.
Yeah, and be like, where were you?
Yeah, locate my phone. I think there's an app for that. I'm pretty sure there is for like the iPhone. I mean, there's probably one for every phone that people have like for their kids to track where their kids are.
Yeah.
But yeah, that at least we could go out for the day and there were no distractions. There was no, and like I said, since our parents knew who their kids were going to be hanging out with, it wasn't a big deal if we were out for the day. And we also weren't bad kids. Like we didn't get we didn't go, I mean, probably lame kids by comparison, but we didn't go out drinking. We didn't go try and get some college kid to buy us booze or something like that and go sit around. We were going out looking for CDs, go to Applebee's or something, go get a booth at a restaurant after 10, get some cheap appetizers, and just yak about music. Or a lot of times we'd be going to, at that point, you had a more working guitar than I did. So half the time when we would leave class for the day, we'd go to your house in the afternoons, both your parents were at work, and we'd play guitar. We'd be passing it back and forth because we only had the one between us. This PV kind of Strat ripoff. And
PV Predator.
That was it, the PV Predator. And we'd just play songs, and I had a decent ear, so I would figure out a few Ramon songs or something, and I'd kind of show you how to play them. And then we fast forward to that summer before... See, we had a good 3 months in between when high school ended and when I left, when I went into the Marine Corps and headed off to boot camp. But something's telling me it was August. And I went and got my only Fender Strat. And then you would come over and you and I would just be playing all the time.
Yeah.
And we would get together. And then I got my acoustic, too. I got my Taylor a week after I got my Strat. Spent a lot of money on gear that summer. But I was working and I was having fun and I was 18 and didn't have a lot of responsibility. I wasn't paying $100 a month for a cell phone.
Right.
So it was easier to go buy a $600 guitar when I'm putting gas in my car, pay for my car insurance. That's it. Living at home. no credit cards and none of that stuff. No actual bills.
No, you didn't have to worry about anything.
Right. If I could put gas in my car, I could pay for my car, I could pay my insurance, that's it. It's all I had to worry about. So I could buy CDs and guitars, and you and I could go out to eat.
All the time.
That was what we did. That was just our thing. And it's one of those things that has continued on for ages where you and I just go CD shopping. We haven't been able to do it this time, unfortunately.
No.
But during this trip. But just going out CD shopping has been our thing for so, so long. And it's kind of that and going to the movies, actually. Even when I moved back in 2008, you and I would go to the movies pretty regularly.
Yeah.
I mean, at least like once a month, you and I would go catch something, just the two of us.
Yeah.
And then complain about how we hated the new Transformers movie and all that. So we go see Harry Potter. Went and saw the last couple of Harry Potter movies together.
But you know what's funny? Like when we saw those movies, especially the second Transformers movies, we're just sitting there. And we're kind of just not paying attention to the movie. We're kind of just like looking at you like,
ugh.
Dude, how long is this going to go on? You want to get out of here?
Yeah, I think we should leave.
Because even on the first Transformer movies, when I went to, I think I saw it with Pace and James.
Yeah, I was in California when the first one came out.
And me and Pace are just like, ugh. And I don't know what James felt. He's probably thinking about something else.
He probably was paying attention either.
But... Those are bad movies, and it's just so funny because, like, when you go to the movies with your friends and you expect to have different tastes and different things, but somehow we all agreed that this movie sucked and we went again.
Yeah, most of the time, yeah, we really did, and that's why I think it's why you and I have so much fun going to the movies. I mean, even though we were kind of, I think we were both hesitant about the second Transformers movie.
Right.
Because the first one we weren't crazy about, but we were still smart enough to say, all right, well, if we're going to see it, we might as well see it in the movies.
Right.
And maybe it's a step up. I think at the time I looked at it as, well, the first X-Men movie was okay, and the second one was awesome. I said, maybe it'll be the same thing where, like, in the first Transformers movie, you met the characters. In the second one, you kind of get to see them in action. And it just wasn't that at all.
Yeah, but when we went to see Lord of the Rings the first time, back in 2000.
Yes, the Fellowship of the Ring we saw together, too, in the movies.
That was awesome. That was in the theater.
Yeah, and that was a big deal, because that was a really big... This is before there were big movies, where now a big movie comes out every other week.
Right.
Every other weekend, there's a new big, high-end special effects extravaganza that comes out. But in 2001, it was Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, and that was kind of it.
Right.
Exactly. At that point, the Batman movies were still kind of blacklisted.
Oh, yeah, because so they were that. Awful.
Yeah, this is before comic book movies were cool again. Actually, well, the figure 2002, I think, was Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, yeah.
Kind of the beginning, and then the following year was X-Men 2. And that's when things kind of started to take off again. But that was kind of it. So it was even a big deal to go see something like Lord of the Rings in 2001.
Right.
I mean, it still is amazing. Those movies are incredible.
But I remember when... I guess me and Pace saw a lot of movies too, and we walked out in a lot of movies as well.
See, that I understand that, because I don't believe in, I'd rather part with the money than the time. That's just kind of always the way I am.
Yep.
Where it's, if I'm not enjoying it, it's like, let's get out of here. And I've only walked out of two movies off the top of my head. There must be more.
Avatar.
Avatar was one of them, and I got so much grief for that. And you still haven't seen Avatar, right?
I just don't feel the need to see it.
Don't waste your time. I only saw it because of hype. I was like, all right, fine, I'll go see it.
Right.
Because everybody wouldn't shut up about it. So I went and saw it, and I got an hour into it, and I thought, I can't give up another 2 hours of my life to this movie. I do not care about anything that's going on. And you were smarter than me in as much as you agreed, like, yeah, that movie looks stupid. Why'd you see it? Those were the days.
If I had a time machine, man, I'd go back.
I would just like to observe. I must be funny looking at us. I think it'd be, I don't think it'd be that much different.
Right.
But looking at us, let's say we're, like, if we could.
But I want to relive some of those moments, you know.
Just
relive, like, some of the rehearsals, you know, us going out to the warehouse. That's
awesome. That was a good time. It's so funny, like, climbing into the time machine in our minds, to sound like a stoner. But to go through this big shoebox I have of old pictures of us from like 2001 and 2, and throwing on two CDs of rehearsals, because I saw this. As I'm sitting here, I turned around. It didn't, with this giant bookcase full of CDs that's in my in my bedroom in my parents' house where we're recording right now, and then looking and seeing the on the spine of one of these discs I'd printed an insert, and I was like, oh man, that's a stack of like rehearsal CDs. Because when we booked into the big room, that was a big deal because all the other rehearsal rooms had tape recorders in them, and there's still loads and loads of tapes that I'd have to go through.
Yeah,
with songs that never came to be and shouldn't be. Classics that never were, like Clock on the Wall. And all these other songs.
Clock on the Wall.
Clock on the Wall. 1, 2, 3, 4. And just seeing this disc, and I thought, oh man, I got to pop this in. I haven't heard this in a good couple of years. And I don't know how long it's been since you've heard it. You probably have a copy somewhere, but.
Smells like cheese.
Oh, smells like cheese. Oh yeah, there were tapes. Dan and I used to get together in the basement at my parents' house when we both lived in Lakewood, New Jersey. And I lived in a ranch house. My family had a ranch house. So the basement was the size of the house. So all my guitars and stuff were downstairs. And I would set up a little tape recorder and would plug a guitar into my amp. And Dan would just start jamming out these kind of chord progressions. Because Dan was really, really, I don't know about now because I haven't heard you play in a while. But Dan was a really, really good rhythm guitar player and play all these kind of pop punk power chord progressions. And they just sounded so good. And actually, you know what? I remember what was kind of the impetus for even getting together and you and I playing in a band in the first place. Do you know what that was? I don't know if we've talked about this or not.
I have no idea.
It was Christmas of 99.
Was it?
It was our first Christmas together. And I remember I got you Lifestyles the Ramones on VHS.
I still have it.
I gave that to you at school. And you gave me the first self-titled Riverdale CD.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which I didn't even own a Screeching Weasel CD at that point because it was Dan Vapid and Ben Weasel from Screeching Weasel. I don't remember who played drums for the band, but he may have been one of the thousands of members of Screeching Weasel
right
at that point. But you got it for me, and I listened to it. And for some reason, I don't know, maybe it was just I'd already been listening to the Ramones and Huntington's and all that stuff because you'd got me into that because it was always playing in your car. And thanks to you making me tapes, and thanks to Warehouse Music being able to specially order CDs, we'd acquired just a bunch of stuff. We just bought so much stuff and traded tapes with each other, even like stuff like the Misfits and all that, and the Buzzcocks. Like we kind of got a hold of some of that stuff, courtesy of our friend Christian, who had it all on CD and made tapes for us, or at least let us borrow tapes, and then we would make a copy of the tape.
He was 10 years older than us.
He was, yeah, he was 10 years old. He was 28, so. Yeah. So it was he already had accumulated this stuff. He'd grown up with it, essentially. Anyway, I don't know. I think it appealed to me because it was like a power trio, but it wasn't as bombastic as something like Rush right. or Jimi Hendrix, which, you know, I mean, stuff I was listening to at the time, like what's classified as classic rock.
Right.
And there's just something about the bass guitar, drums, vocals that just, I thought, wow, this would be really fun to do. Because I was up to my ears, literally and figuratively, in Iron Maiden and hair metal and a lot of rock, which was still somewhat modern because Aerosmith was still going strong up to at least the mid-90s. And then I was really in, everyone knows, I made no bones about the fact that I was way into the Sammy Hagar era of Van Halen. And so I was listening to a lot of that stuff, and that was the stuff I was kind of playing on guitar along with AC/DC and bands like that. I just really got into the whole how stripped down it was. And kind of how accessible it was, since it was also all power chords. Because at the point, I was kind of getting frustrated around the time I met you, around senior year of high school. I'd been playing guitar for 2 years. And I was trying to play, even though I could play things like AC/DC and all that, I wanted to play stuff. I want to play Randy Rhoads and like all the kind of great heavy metal guitar players especially. And I just couldn't get that stuff under my fingers. And there was and then listening to things beyond that, like going deeper to stuff like Iron Maiden. And then I got really into, let's say, the white blues guitars, let's say, junior year, like Eric Clapton. And I'd gone back and started listening to stuff like that. And I didn't have any sense of feel for playing. And I didn't have the technical ability to play stuff, like some of the really technical metal, like Dream Theater I was listening to at the time as well. And I just couldn't get any of it under my fingers. And I was getting really frustrated with guitar playing. And I was almost ready to quit. So then along came you with your pop punk and your loud music and your power chords.
Yeah, three chords, simple songs,
yeah.
Catchy.
And I'm learning how to play these Ramones songs. I actually learned how to play the Ramones songs from the Huntington's CD, Rocket to Ramonia, yeah. Which was all covers because you'd gotten a hold of that and you'd put a copy on cassette for me. And I was using that because not that the Ramones albums, particularly the first four, had huge production values, but I was just able to hear it more clearly. It sounded even more stripped down when the Huntingtons did it. So I was able to learn these Ramones songs. Then something I hear something like the Riverdales, and I think, oh, man, this is easy. And I could just, the songs are two and a half minutes, and I can play this. I thought, this would be fun. Like, I was thinking that'd be something to do on the side, almost like a side band. And you and I were kind of getting together anyway for a while and just jamming. But not much happened, although we did make one failed attempt at playing it, having a performance together at the end of senior year. Yeah. I know you remember this.
Yeah,
we even talked about this before.
We even had the Justin Bosco come over my house.
We did, remember? Yeah. We had decided on the day. This was May, maybe June, right at the tail end of senior year. We're going to be graduating soon. And there was an art show at school in the library. And the library, the way it was situated in Lakewood High School, was kind of in the middle of the front of the building. So you're kind of walking past it all day.
It was a big library.
It was a really nice. Big. It was. And it was two floors. Or was it three? It was, two floors. It was definitely two.
Yeah.
And we'd gotten to second period, as we always did, sitting in Latin class. And we're looking at the art show, and probably I suggested it, being the troublemaker. Said, you want to go to the art show? Let's get out of here. So we got up and left, and we didn't leave the building, went to the art show. And they had bands playing, and they had people with people that made like art, like painted or had drawn things or whatever, students, and were displaying things. But they also had musicians playing all day, you know, high school kids who were playing in bands. There was actually one band who was, they were playing Billy Joel songs. They did all Billy Joel songs, but almost
yeah, it was kind of girl punk-ish. Band.
Yeah, it was an all-girl band, which is even more kind of random. Not only were they just playing Billy Joel, but they were all girls, and they were playing really well in like a punkish kind of styly. And it just crossed our mind, like, maybe we should do something. Maybe we should play at this art show. So I, at that point, it was you and I had decided that I was the better guitar player. You were the better singer. So we're going to do a couple of Ramones songs. So we need to find a drummer and a bass player that day. So yeah, you knew Justin Bosco, who played bass and was really, really good. Even at, what was he, a year younger than us, I think?
Yeah, he was,
so
he's fun. He was phenomenal.
16, 17. He was so good.
Right.
Far better than both of us put together on any instrument. Right. And that was really tough. That was something I always had trouble finding, was bass players, especially guys who were really good, not guys who could just thump the root note. And he was really good. And then we got Brian Nielsen to play drums.
Because, yeah, we were talking to them at the art show. And then I guess I asked Justin Bosco, hey, want to come over to my house? And then we'll teach you some of the stuff that we're going to do at the art show.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, sure, I'll come by. So we ended up, you know, just cutting class and just going back to my house for like an hour. These are the songs. It's a few chords and that's it.
We were doing, I'm trying to remember, I know we were doing we were going to open with Blitzkrieg Bop, Teenage Lobotomy, and then I think Susie's a Headbanger. I think we only were going to do three.
Yeah.
Because it was, I don't know how long, I think maybe it was 15 minutes tops. Like everybody only got a couple of songs.
Yeah, and then we went back to school, even though we cut school in the first place.
We go back during last period, so this is between 1:30, and I think 2:15 was when school let out, now that I'm thinking about it. And we go back there, and we talk to the guy who will remain nameless, who was coordinating rather the bands that were playing. And he said, oh, yeah, after these, whoever was playing, after they're done, you guys can go on. And it was okay. And I actually borrowed a guitar from somebody. I think I borrowed a guitar from Christian, which is all covered in like punk band stickers, bands I never heard of or anything like that. And there was a drum kit that was set up there for the day. I believe there was a bass amp and a guitar amp.
Yep.
So all we had to do was show up with the guitar, my borrowed guitar, Justin's bass. And they, you know, all the lyrics. And they had a mic. And that was it. There's only one mic. So it was going to be you singing, me on guitar, Justin bass, Brian on drums. And we get up there, we get everything plugged in, and we kind of hadn't said anything to anybody. Now, I wouldn't go so far as to say we were popular in high school. But at that point, we're seniors. We had met and had classes with enough people that people certainly knew who we were. And a crowd started to gather as we were plugging our stuff in and getting ready to go. And it was kind of weird. Like, suddenly there was this interest, which we weren't expecting. We were just doing it for fun. Right. We were just going to have a laugh. Like, let's do a couple of Ramones songs at the art show and get up there and knock it out and then be done with it. And we got up there and we were kind of ready to start. I don't think we didn't count off or anything.
Something happened where all of a sudden
that guy just said, all right, all of you got to get out of here.
No, it was one teacher piped up. I remember she stood up and said, I don't remember the kid's name, but she said, so-and-so is scheduled to be next, and he will be our last performer, which was crazy because, first of all, it wasn't that close to the end of the school day. And he was doing just going to stand up there and sing one song by himself.
Right.
Which was weird because there was still like 15 minutes left in the day. So we could have gone on there and played. I mean, between those songs.
Five-minute song.
Yeah.
5 minutes.
5 minutes altogether. Yeah, between all the songs, we would have been off there in like 6.5 minutes. Tops. But the fact that we'd gotten up there, we plugged everything in, which wasn't quick, but she'd essentially cut us off. We were like, damn it. Man, we went home so upset, but the student, by the way, the guy who was coordinating the band said, well, come back tonight. We're going to be doing this tonight. Why don't you guys come in and do a couple of songs? And I was like, sure. Okay, we'll come back. And then we thought, well, we'll get together and we'll rehearse the songs. I think Justin was playing with another group, so he didn't meet up with us again, but we weren't worried about him at all.
Right.
All he had to know was the chord progressions, which for those Ramon songs were all within the same couple of chords anyway. So we weren't worried about him, but you and I and Brian got together in a room in someone I was working for at the time who had a, because I was kind of roadieing for somebody at the time. That's a whole other story or a collection of stories. But we got together in his rehearsal room, which is above his garage in his house, and we rehearsed the songs a bunch of times. There's a tape of that floating around here too, the art show rehearsal. So we go back to the art show that night, and because we were like a last minute addition, he'd given us a slot near the end. It wasn't a long thing, maybe like 7 to 9, and not all the bands who played during the day were going to be playing that night, which was fine because most people wanted to play for the other students and all that. Not everyone wanted to play for parents and all that. There's going to be more of a turnout during the day because it was in the middle of a school day. So we were going to go up once again near the end, being a last minute addition. And I don't know who the guys were who went up before us. They were playing like instrumental versions of stuff like Crazy Train. I just remember the guitar player was really good. And you and I were looking at each other like, damn, who's this guy?
Right.
Because we hadn't recognized them. I didn't know who this person was. Otherwise, I probably would have gotten together with them, frankly. Like, hey, can you show me some stuff? But they were in the middle of, I think it might have been Crazy Train or another instrumental kind of medley. And the guy who's coordinating it, who was in a band, gets up there and while they're in the middle of the song goes, all right, knock that shit off. And then they stop playing in the middle of the song and he goes up and says, all right, that's it, everybody. We got one more band for you, blah, blah, blah. And it was his band.
Yeah.
And he didn't even say anything to us.
No.
And we were livid.
Right.
We were so pissed, man.
Even Justin was kind of pissed because Justin was like, well, that's screwed up. That's...
Yeah, what the hell? I mean, he played earlier that night already, but he hung around.
Yeah, he was kind of like, well, that's not fair at all. Like, he was kind of mad, too. And I remember Ed DeHaren getting all...
Oh, he was really mad. He sat outside with a bat. We were hanging outside of his car. We ended up leaving because he was waiting since this guy who was coordinating the performance of the event, his band was playing, which was even more screwed up because that band played for a half hour because we waited outside because we were all pissed. Ed was pissed and Ed seriously had a bat in his back seat and he pulled it out and he was ready for this guy to come out after the show was done and get in his face. But that band ended up playing for like a half hour.
Yeah.
And they let out late, no less.
Right.
And it was basically, he cut this other band off and then cut us despite being a last minute addition, but still like we were expected to go on. We ended up just going to the diner.
Yeah,
so nothing happened, but that was such a letdown because we were pulling for it. We're like, this is going to be fun. Because we thought we're graduating in 3 weeks.
Right.
Let's just do this and get out. Like this will be fun. We'll say and we played at our high
Brian
school.
Brian was a freshman at the time.
Yeah.
He was. He was a freshman.
And yeah, Justin was a junior, so they still had some time. But for us, we thought, oh, this is cool. What a cool note to go out on, pardon the pun. Like, we're going to play a couple of songs and then good night, everybody.
Yeah.
See you later, class of 2000.
See you later.
That was a bummer, though. That
I
was
still hold a grudge against that.
Against that person?
Yeah.
I was pissed. I saw that person a couple of years later who was working at a CD store, short-lived CD store, that was actually in Lakewood, funnily enough. And even then, like, he came up and tried to talk to me, like, how you doing, man? I was like, he'd been like a hippie at that point, which is funny because his band was very Limp Bizkit-y. Because I was popular at the time.
He was rapping.
Yeah. He was a total trend rider. 2 years before, he'd been in like a Nirvana ripoff band.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Limp Bizkit hit, he started doing that. And then he basically looked like a kind of like a hippie.
Yeah. Oh, he was working at Free Old Music for a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
Because I remember talking to him. He's like, yeah, I got to look at my new band. It's like a jazz mixed in with metal.
Yeah.
Mixed in with like Mexican music. I was like, what are you talking about? You can't mix those genres.
You can, but how does that sound good? I remember that's how I ran into him. He's like, yeah, I'm playing this jazz metal band. I'm like, what does that mean? What's jazz metal? He's making stuff up? Oh, man. Because we did, for a town like Lakewood, where there weren't a lot of people, we did know a few people who were in bands for one reason or another, which I can't even remember at this point. Could never get it together. But, yeah, we still carried on after I came home. Fast forward a few months, and I was out
of... But I think that's what drove us to do those 2001 rehearsals.
Yeah, where we kind of had a score to settle.
The Dirty Mem rehearsals.
Yeah, that was... I think you said it. There should be a band. I think we're still sitting in Latin class one day. You said, it'd be funny if there was a band called Dirty Men. And we just laughed at it. And I thought it was a funny name. So when we started rehearsing, and that's what's written on the spine of a rehearsal CD that I saw before, we started booking rehearsals as Dirty Men. And everybody thought that was a stupid name. And I guess it is, but it's funny. And what's the alternative, especially if you're playing kind of rock and punkish stuff? Yeah, Ramones-ish stuff. Yeah, other than just being the nouns.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to come up with a name that would sound similar, like the Queers, you know, mm-hmm. something. Oh, Dirty Men. That's like, you know.
Yeah, that doesn't seem out of place.
Yeah.
Compared to some other band names, yeah, it seemed totally logical. It fit in as far as we were concerned, but there seemed to be some backlash to the name. Not that we ever booked gigs or anything. We rehearsed on and off for like a year. But unfortunately, not ever came. We had tons of rehearsal CDs, though, and cassettes. They're hours.
2001 and 2002.
Yeah, we did. I think we finally called it in 2002. You and our drummer, Tim, both left me voicemails on the same day saying you were quitting, and I was like, I was heartbroken.
Yeah.
But at that point, we've been trying for a year, and it didn't pan out. But still, you and I have tried to get bands up and running a few times, and it hasn't happened, and still threatening to do an acoustic gig somewhere. But even that is tough because there aren't really any coffee shops around here anymore. Or if they do, they don't do open mic.
But those rehearsals in 2010 were pretty fun. I think we were more structured.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And once again, drummer was tough to nail down, which is crazy because...
We finally nailed him down, and then he quit.
Yeah.
And that's what really broke everything apart.
It was
we couldn't find another drummer.
It's always been that's always been the bane of my existence. It's been like, there's some bass players who may not have been that good necessarily, but drummers, I always went through drummers like crazy. Ever since I was 16 and I put my first band together up until that last one in 2010. And that was at the point where I said, you know what? I can't be bothered anymore.
But we had some solid songs. We actually worked on those songs.
We did.
Some solid songs.
We had a bunch of cover songs and quite a few originals, and too.
Just no drummer.
Yeah.
But I think if we had a permanent drummer, I think we would have done something with that.
Probably. We still can. Their songs still exist. We can seriously go in and rehearse something and release something.
Right.
If we wanted to. And we probably should, just for the sake of getting it out of our system. Because those songs are still there.
Yeah.
But we did. It was you and I on guitar. Because you were on bass, actually, in the rehearsals in 2001, 2002. Because we eventually, as logic would dictate, started a band with Christian, who was the other guitar player, who was better than either one of us in guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point, I was regarded as the better guitar player, so you were kind of relegated to bass. But you were also really good at bass. I've never been good at bass.
I love playing bass.
Yeah.
You did.
You were. You were really good. And I wasn't that good. I just played bass like a guitar player. So it kind of made sense. And you were very good, too. So it ended up working. But the band we were in with Andrew in 2010 is actually the band who recorded the theme song for The Only Podcast That Matters and the big rock ending that's at the end of every episode of that show. So Dan has kind of been part of The Only Podcast That Matters since the beginning in a certain way.
Well, yeah, I was there when it first started, but never took part of it.
Well, yeah, you were offered the first.
Yeah.
We came to you first when we wanted to do the podcast. And I've told the story before on this show.
Right.
But when we talked about it, it was going to be you and I and Andrew and Ryan, and we were going to do a weekly music show.
Yeah, because
we had that little mini recorder that you would record conversations.
Yes.
And that was, that kind of spread up the idea, but I guess I didn't want to be a part of the next step. So,
well, like, you didn't, you kind of looked at it as like, who's going to listen to this?
Right.
Like, you just didn't know like that, that there would be an audience for it. But I mean, nobody does until they put something out there. I mean, then 19 new sitcoms debut every fall. No one knows if anyone's going to watch.
Exactly.
So it's kind of the same thing where, well, we need to do something and put it out there. And you just kind of couldn't see beyond who's going to listen to it. And I think the other part of it, in my estimation, was like, well, who would listen to us talk about music? A, who's going to listen to this show? B, who's going to want to listen to us talk about this stuff? Of course, fast forward a few months later, which is why I say all the time that I, half jokingly, that Jack owes me his podcasting career because I suggested him as the fourth person. And about a year later, and you finally popped up on the show. And at that point, we had an audience and we were getting a good response from everything. And then spontaneously, you showed up on a show and made a splash. And now you've been a part of the podcast ever since. Very regularly, I have to say.
Right.
You pop up on the show, which is great because it's always fun. I mean, it's considering all the conversations you and I have had, which was the only kind of one thing that you and I haven't done, which I always thought we would do, which was that we were eventually going to get an apartment together, which never happened for one reason or
another.
We were
talking about it for a while, but I guess it never happened.
No, it never happened. But it was also a matter of neither of us was working in the same area. So right. It was, well, where would we move? And then it was, can we afford it? And then just the way things kind of progressed. And then, of course, with you. And it's probably not going to happen now with you being married and all. It's unlikely because your wife might have something to say about that. That was probably the only thing that we said, like, yeah, we're going to do this. And then it hadn't happened. Just the way things laid out, which is why it's so weird to think, wow, man, 14 years.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Right.
It's crazy to think about that. And no one ever believes anybody when they say, oh, time goes by fast. And I mean, me being the oldest of the immediate, at least New Jersey social circle, and all the guys involved and gals involved in the only podcast, I've said time goes faster. Every year it goes by faster. After I turned 30, it went by even faster, and it continues to go faster.
Those guys are still in their 20s, right?
Well, Andrew and Ryan just turned 30 at the end of last year. Ryan's birthday was last month in December, and Andrew's is 10 days after mine in October. Right. Well, 2 years and 10 days after mine. So just turned 30. But still, it's. I mean, I even said to Jack back when I was, it was over the summer, because it was right around the time we started, because our first episode ever of The Only Podcast Matters, we recorded June 30th, 2010. And that was when I was 28. I turned 29 in the weekend we actually launched the website, that following October. But I said to Jack after he turned 28 this past summer in July, I said, wow, you are now the age I was when we started doing this podcast. That's how fast time goes, Jack. And he was like, whoa.
Yeah, and I kind of envy somebody who's 27, 28. I wish I was 27, 28.
Well, I wish I was 27, 28 when we were 27, 28. I don't know. I mean, there's such a huge disparity in between when we were the way we grew up and the way we went to high school. I mean, like, when did you first get an internet connection? Like, I was 17.
98.
Oh, really? Okay, so you had one a year before I did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was...
That was a year after the internet launch in 97.
Well, yeah, after AOL and all that kind of made it where it was like maybe you had a computer in your house that had the internet, but not everyone did.
Yeah.
And there was AOL, which was $10 a month, and it was only through your phone.
And that's where you had 20. To play video games from Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
And there was no internet to look up what you would need to do. You would just spend hours in the video game trying to figure out what you're supposed to do.
Right. Or you'd have to subscribe to Nintendo Power, or you'd have to buy the strategy guide.
Or just figure stuff out by word of mouth at school, but that was it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of glad we were on the edge of that, and not in a good way or a bad way, but we were kind of, we'd gone through our whole adolescence without dependence on the internet or cell phones or anything like that, or iPods.
Yep.
Like we grew up kind of without that stuff. So I think to a degree we have more of an appreciation for it. And at the same time became very adept at it because we were still, not that anyone can't, but like my parents will never be as good with a computer or a cell phone as I am, or Googling something. But I think being on the other side of it where it's like, well, still in our young adulthood, we had these items.
We were kind of in the middle of it. I mean, we weren't. We're part of Generation X, but we're also part of Generation Y. So we're kind of in between Generation X and Y.
Yeah, which is weird. They're kind of in that no man's land.
Yeah.
I've seen that actually, because since I was born October of 81, you were born February of 82. That's kind of where, depending, I don't know if there is an official structure as far as dates go, right, but that's kind of in the middle of where some people say Generation X ends around the end of 81 would be the last part of Generation X, and then Y begins at the beginning of 82.
Right.
And some will say they overlap between like 1981, 1982. Right. So yeah, we kind of are in the middle of that.
Right.
Except on the tail end of one and kind of in the front of another, which is a little weird, but we at least have that perspective of, okay, we grew up without Netflix and iPods and
right,
smartphones.
Yeah. Generation X's view, we grew up without that. Yeah, we also grew up without that as well, but it later came.
Yeah, we became very, very handy with it, and just as dependent on it as anybody else.
Right,
as
so we're kind of in between, you know, because it's crazy.
Oh, it totally is crazy, which is why you and I still have that affection where we need to go out and hunt for CDs, because we're not content to just
because,
buy stuff
on
iTunes.
Generation Y didn't sit in sixth grade with a floppy disk on an Apple Macintosh, you know? Like, that's what I grew up with. It was a floppy disk and some cheap Apple Macintosh playing Carmen Sandiego on it.
On a black and white monitor.
People part of the Generation Y never had to do that. I mean, so that's why I consider myself Generation X and then part of Generation Y.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, now even in sixth grade, geez, there's some schools. Maybe it could be elsewhere. I think in California, is because I end up hearing that stuff because it's local news. But where in some schools, they're kind of depending on tablets now. Digital tablets, obviously, right, not stone ones, because it's more cost effective for them to buy tablets in bulk than it is for them to buy books in bulk. So they can just put, the study materials, on this electronic device.
Remember how many books you had in your book bag?
Oh, forget it. You break your shoulder and sling that thing.
I forgot my book in my locker.
Oh, well, I'm screwed. I'm taking a zero today.
Yeah. And it's so funny because your teacher would not let you go and get it. Even if it was just around, right around the corner.
Yeah.
Go get your book.
Chance. No. Or if you left your book at home.
Yeah.
Even before we had lockers, up till sixth grade, before we had lockers.
Exactly.
Forget it. You'd be stuck. Or you can leave them in your desk.
Right.
But having I think that's more dangerous. I'd rather be stuck with a $40 book than a $600 tablet. Like, which one would you rather have to be responsible for?
Exactly.
I mean, even going, taking the bus to school all throughout. So it must have been throughout high school and middle school.
What's the protection of the tablets?
Oh, I have no idea.
Because we used to make book covers.
I guess they could put some kind of case on them.
And those are fun, making book covers. Just take a piece of, like, you know, grocery bag.
Yeah,
you know,
brown paper bag. Yeah. You could draw stuff on the cover. It was fun.
Yeah.
But, I wore a Walkman all the way from seventh
like a
grade.
CD Walkman and a tape Walkman?
Cassette. I don't even think I had a CD one that I brought to school.
Yeah, one of the teachers took my cassette Walkman when I was...
I had a cassette
sophomore.
Walkman. Oh man, I had a cassette Walkman stolen out of my backpack in gym.
Oh no!
Someone went in the locker room and went through a bunch of them. And the worst part was it had a get on this long before you kids had your torrent sites. I took tapes and CDs out of the public library, and I had a public library cassette in there when it was stolen. So not only was I out the $20 Walkman, but I had to go buy like a $12 cassette too. To replace at the library.
Those were when cassettes are pretty expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. Now new CDs aren't even that expensive.
No.
I remember before we moved to this house, when my sister and I were going through some old papers and stuff in the basement, finding old ads from like 1988 for like Caldor, and looking at CDs, like cassette 788, CD 1088, you know, for like Slippery When Wet by Bon Jovi or something. Looking at these CDs like, oh man, do you remember this? And now like CDs, I ain't going to Best Buy, and there's a huge $5 CD section.
Yeah.
For some of those same CDs that were 10 bucks 20 odd years ago.
Yep.
I don't know. I have to say, I'm glad we grew up the way we did though.
Yeah.
Even though we're not old by any stretch.
I thought it was perfect.
Yeah, it was.
I wouldn't ask for anything else.
Yeah, and to have those, to be on both sides of that. Like
right.
We still became adults in the internet age and have had smartphones for, at this point, a couple of years.
Right.
It's been almost it's been between 4 and 5 years since I got my first smartphone.
Yeah.
And iPods and all that.
I'm pretty savvy with them.
So yeah.
We're not really, you know, behind the times.
No, no, we're not really intimidated by necessarily any of that stuff.
No.
But
we might be 20 years from now when my kid is using some fancy machine.
Yeah. That's implanted in their eye that just projects whatever it is in front of them.
I'm like, I'm confused. I'll just pull out my Super Nintendo. This is what we played back in the day, son.
This is 16-bit, son. Do you know what that means? No? Well, you're missing out. This was cutting edge in 93. 1893? No, smartass. I'm with you, though. I agree. There's going to be a point where we're going to fall behind it. That's the weird
thing. That's true.
It happens to every generation.
Yep.
I mean, my parents learned how to program the VCR around the time DVD players came in. So there's always going to be a point where we're going to
fall behind.
Like, yeah. Where it's like, wait a minute, this is that? It's going to be weird for people to even think like, wait a minute, you had to set up this mixer and these mics and all that to record your podcast? That's crazy. Now we just do this.
Right.
And that's even going to be different. This is going to be like an archaic way of recording radio in the future. But, hey, you know what? Without all this stuff, there wouldn't be a podcast. There wouldn't be this. You and I would be sitting and chatting about this stuff anyway, but it wouldn't be out there in the podcast wasteland for people to listen to.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But they can. But hey, man, I'm glad we've at least been around each other through all this stuff. It's been an insane and crazy and wild 14 years, but we're still here. We still talk almost every day.
Yep.
And see each other as often as possible, as often as two people live in opposite ends of the country can.
Yep.
But still good, man.
Good times. Good memories.
Well, thanks for sitting down. I'm glad we got to do this finally.
No problem.
Sit and just have another quiet, laid-back conversation by comparison. If you folks listen to, first of all, go get the only podcast that matters on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, Beyond Pod, BlackBerry Podcast, whatever it is you like. And Dan was on the recent Xmas cast episode from a few weeks ago, which was funny, and he and I are a lot more exuberant in that, particularly him. And also check out the 2013 recap from January 3rd, 2014. God, it's the first time I'm saying that. Something that was released in 2014, where we look back, myself, Andrew, Ryan, and Jack look back at 2013 and all its glory and gruesomeness. And of course, this show, Chris Abal's Podcast Experiment, subscribe on iTunes, coming soon to those other apps I mentioned before. I will keep you posted on that. And like the show on Facebook, look for Chris Abal's Podcast Experiment, follow the show on Twitter at Cape Pod. And that's it, folks. Thanks for listening. Until next time, for Dan Hempel, this is Chris Abalo, and this is yet another experiment.